From Springfield, this is State Week, a program of analysis and commentary on the events that made news this past week in Illinois state government and politics.
Well, the governor is again talking about a long-range plan to fund state pensions. Not everyone, though, is on board. We'll discuss that. Also, the race for the Democratic nomination for the U.S. Senate is heating up. And what's happening with the Chicago Bears? They continue to push for a new stadium. We'll talk about that and more coming up on State Week. I'm Sean Crawford in Springfield. Our panel includes Charlie Wheeler, Emeritus, Professor Emeritus, and former Director of the Public Affairs Reporting Program at the University of Illinois Springfield. Charlie's also been a longtime reporter and observer. And our guest this week, good to have him back with us, Greg Hines, columnist for Crane Chicago Business. Greg, thanks for being with us.
Always a pleasure.
Greg, the state's pensions have been a longtime concern. Charlie and I have talked about this for many years, and both of us are members of the State University retirement system. And Charlie, of course, is retired at this point. But the pensions, they've been out there for a long time, this issue. And while they're not funded long term at the level that many credit rating agencies want to see, lawmakers still always seem hesitant to do a whole lot. Well, now J.B. Pritzker is again pushing a plan that he's pushed before that would fully fund pensions, he says, by 2048. He wants direct surpluses in the account that pays out tax refunds to the pension systems to go to those. And also, there are other measures that do something similar, paying now to get this debt more under control. So what is the problem that some find with this plan, especially right now?
Well, the problem is that it's always easier to spend money on stuff you want right now, like education or roads or public security, whereas pensions, well, that's later. We'll worry about that down the road. That's, you know, we got this 50-year plan to amortize it all. The fact of the matter is that Illinois pensions, they kind of seem to have finally bottomed and are starting a very slow crawl up. But the indebted level, the difference between what we owe and what we have to pay is still around $150 billion, billion with the B. The funded ratio of assets to liabilities has started to increase a little bit, but is still in the 40 percentile range. Most good pension funds are at least 80%. What the governor is proposing to do is to do something that they've already started up in Cook County and even the city of Chicago, which is not just put in the statutory amount, the amount the legislature says they're going to spend on pensions, but put in a little bit more. And he wants to do that because even now, we're still paying off bad debt at such a rate that we're not contributing the amount that the actuaries say we need to contribute. So we get a little further behind the hole every year. So he wants to take these revenue streams that you're talking about it and put it in. It's not a huge amount of money. It looks like it might be $300-400 million a year at most. But it's enough that Don Harmon, the president of the Senate, when asked about this during the week, suggested, well, you know, we got these big bills we're going to have to pay because Trump is cutting off money. And maybe this isn't the right time. Let's talk about it later. That's in the Illinois tradition. It's bad politics, bad government, because everybody knows that Tier 2, which is the system that applies to people who were hired after 2010, doesn't put in enough to meet Social Security guidelines. And sooner or later, we're going to have a real problem. So we know we're going to have to put in more. And the longer you wait to put in, the more you're going to have to put in. But, you know, tomorrow's another day. We got other problems. Let's not do it now.
Yeah, Charlie, you've always talked about this issue maybe differently than a lot of politicians do, in the sense that when people talk about full funding, what they're talking about is not necessarily reality for how the pension systems work.
Well, in a sense, it's based on how much money does the pension system, well, let's say, Sean, you and I are in the state universities, and how much money should the state put aside to pay for your future benefits that you're earning for the year that you're working for UIS? How much should they put aside to pay for my future benefits? Now, obviously, in your case, they'll have to put away a lot more money because you're going to live a heck of a lot longer than I am, I hope. And in my case, probably not so much. But then they calculate it and they say, these are the benefits that are earned in a particular year, and money should be set aside to cover those benefits in the future. And we have never done that from day one. a couple of years ago, I did some research and followed up on some other staff research. And there was a report that came out in the 19-teens from a Senate committee, state Senate committee, warning that the state was not putting enough money into the pension system to be able to pay future benefits. Now, we've never defaulted on benefits, and we probably never will, because if it comes to the day that we can't pay the current benefits, then we're in much deeper trouble than that. But as Greg suggested, we're getting a little better, and the most recent report showed that the unfunded liability was roughly $143.5 billion, and the pension systems are funded at 47.8% of the amount of money that would be required if they had to pay off everybody's benefits at the same time, which obviously will never happen. So in theory, the governor's idea is very sound. We should move away maybe from this goal that was set years ago for us to be 90% funded by 2045 to go to 100% funded by 2048. The difficulty is the money that the governor wants to use is really not going to be there, I don't think, given all the other problems we're facing. And one of the things that Don Harmon said, the Senate president, he basically supports what the governor wants to do, but he said, and this is a quote, "I don't know if this is the year to do it, because I don't think we can do that in isolation. There are some other competing pressures on funding pensions and level of pension benefits, and I think the price tag right now may be too much to pay when tomorrow morning we could be another $1 billion in the hole because of a tweet." And obviously, that was a reference to Donald Trump and the actions that he's taking, in many people's judgment, including mine, to punish states led by Democratic governors by cutting back all kinds of benefits for social services.
Greg, it seems like Harmon has a point here.
He does, Sean, but I think the Senate president's position also reflects another bit of politics that's going on out there, which is that the labor unions, in their comments so far, have made it clear they don't like this idea at all. And you would think they might because it puts more money in the pensions that are underfunded, but they desperately want to overturn as much of tier two as possible. They want to increase the benefits as close to tier one as they can. I think there's concern on their part that if they do this, it'll take the pressure off. This will be the quote the solution to the Social Security problem, and therefore they won't get what they want, which is better benefits. So, the combination of a shortage of state funds and the fact that one of the main beneficiary groups, organized labor, is against this, that's a pretty good sized brick. I don't see at this point, unless somebody changes their mind, I don't see this going very far, even though Pritzker, who we all think is at least kicking tires on running for president, clearly would like to be able to point to progress on dealing with this liability.
Is that why he's doing this now? You think now he's got a budget address coming up in just a couple of weeks. So is he doing it now to sort of set the stage for something that can play nationally?
Well, he did introduce a very similar plan a couple of years ago. Is politics a part of this? Sure. Everything this governor does right now is going to be viewed through a political lens. But I also think that as a matter of dollars and cents and fiscal prudence, this is the right move. The progress we've made to pay for our pensions has been slow and very painful. We're throwing an incredible amount of money at the pensions now. It's around 20% of general fund spending, and we're still only just barely treading water. We need to do more, and I think the governor's proposal recognizes that. If I were to fault him from a fiscal perspective, I would fault him for not doing mo enough, not doing more. But this is something.
And Charlie, I think about this like if I was going, like I had a house payment and I want to start to pay down some of the principal early. once I send that check in, I don't have that check to spend anymore. Yes, it's paying down my long-term debt, but I'm not necessarily having it if my car breaks down tomorrow. It seems to me like Harmon has a point here, and maybe there's a better way to deal with this. Like, maybe you could just put this money, if you have it, and that's a big if you have some of this excess money, you can put it in something like a rainy day fund and then decide later what to do with it.
Yeah, and we've kind of done that in the past. As a matter of fact, because of the uncertainty with what's going on with the federal government, we've reserved something like 4% of our general fund spending are allocated or appropriated for this fiscal year, the current fiscal year. We're now halfway through. And there was a report released, actually, we're taping this on a Friday morning, and this was released on Friday morning, where the governor's Office of Management and Budget updated its economic and fiscal policy report from last October. And the bottom line, and this is a quote from the report, since October, budgetary pressures only increased for Illinois and other states with Democratic governors that have been targeted by the federal government for political retribution. One of the things they say, the Trump's budget bill, the big, beautiful bill, as I think he calls it, that it will cost Illinois roughly $587 million in the current fiscal year because of the changes made to federal taxable income. They also, Gombe also said that implementing administrative costs for state agencies, again, under the big, beautiful bill related to food stamps and Medicaid eligibility, will cost the state more than $100 million over the next couple of fiscal years. And then there's always the risk, they point out, if federal funding for child care were reduced or withheld, Illinois would be forced to confront difficult trade-offs between backfilling lost federal dollars or reducing services that allow parents to work and children to receive care. So it's not a good time to be coming up and saying, well, as Sean, as you suggested, well, we're going to pay down our mortgage early, but on the other hand, the roof is leaking and we won't get that fixed. We want to pay down our mortgage.
You're listening to State Week. I'm Sean Crawford in Springfield, along with Charlie Wheeler and Greg Hines with Crane Chicago Business. Well, we mentioned politics and J.B. Pritzker. Greg Pritzker has, you know, as you said, kicking the tires on whether or not he wants to make a presidential bid in a couple of years. And maybe at this point, some people think he's a good possibility. And one of those people is James Carville, the political strategist for Democrats. He made a comment just recently saying that Pritzker might be the best choice that Democrats have. What are the pros and cons of Pritzker? Because he's not polling well right now. What are some of the pros and cons with him?
Well, the pros are that he's a governor from a big state with a lot of electoral votes that's located in a key area of the country, the Midwest, that has a lot of swing states right around it. Presumably people in Indiana and Wisconsin kind of follow Illinois, know what's going on. He's got a pretty good record as governor. He can point to some fiscal successes, like some progress on pensions, like improved credit ratings. At the same time, he's done things that the Democratic base really likes on the immigration, reproductive rights, and so forth. On the other hand, he doesn't look like a president. He's a little lumpy, although he's lost some weight, to his credit. Easy for me to say. He comes from a state that's so blue that maybe it's forced him to take political positions that won't sell very well in certain swing states like sanctuary state status, for instance. Although he didn't sign into law, Bruce Rauner did. That nuance would get lost in a political campaign. And the other is a question of style. I think Democrats across the board want a nominee who's going to really tear into and Trump and the Republicans go at him. But there's a lot of ways to do that. Sometimes you do it with humor. Gavin Newsom, the governor of California, has been pretty good on that count. Maybe do it with a less histrionic style, like Josh Shapiro, the governor of Pennsylvania, has done. So the question is, in that kind of field, how's J.B. Pritzker going to play? We'll see. As you indicated, so far, initial polling, although it's very, very early, shows him running well behind other folks, including Pete Buttigieg, the former transportation secretary. But, Pritzker hasn't underestimated before. He can pay for his own campaign for a very long time. That's tremendously helpful in politics. So we'll see. I mean, he ought to be considered in the pack and with some work to do, but it's still early.
Yeah, and Charlie, he's like Greg said, he can fund a lot of his campaign. He's a billionaire, multi-billionaire. But at the same time, being a billionaire on the Democratic ticket may not necessarily play so well. Some people think he may be out of touch.
Yeah, I find Pritzker, and I've covered him as a, I guess as an observer, if you will, in the occasions I've had to interact with him at conferences and meetings like that. He's a very affable guy, and he relates well with people. In that sense, he's got a little bit of Jim Thompson in him, in my judgment. And he's done a lot, I think, using his money to support other candidates and to support reproductive rights in other states. And so I think he's really a solid, I think he's been a very good governor. And after the string of losers that we've had for the most part during this century, it's nice to get somebody who's really good at the job. I don't have any good sense for what the national scene is. I find it challenging enough to try and keep up with what's happening in Illinois.
Well, there is a big race going on here in the state for a federal office, and it is the Democratic nomination for the U.S. Senate. There are several people running there on the ballot, but three people considered front runners. They're all office holders right now. That includes the Congressman Raja Krishnamoorthy, Congresswoman Robin Kelly, and the Lieutenant Governor Juliana Stratton, who Pritzker backs. And just this past week or so, Pritzker is kind of putting his money where his mouth is, $5 million to a super PAC that is supporting a Stratton. Greg, is it too little too late? Because polling has not necessarily shown her separating from the PAC either.
That's a really good question, Sean. Pritzker and Stratton took kind of a gamble in letting Raja Krishnamoorthy own the airwaves for months and months. He's been up since on TV since, oh golly, at least Halloween, maybe before that. You can't turn on TV in the metropolitan Chicago area and not see a Raja Krishnamoorthy ad. Now maybe that's overkill, and maybe Stratton, in jumping in January, just before the Super Bowl, is the right time to do it. But it's I think political strategists are going to plow through the results when this is over and after the fact and try to figure out an answer to that question. I also think wouldn't eliminate. I think we need to discuss the third candidate too, which Congresswoman Robin Kelly from the South Side and Southwest suburbs. I hate to devolve politics to ethnicity and sex and whatever, but the fact of the matter is that both Kelly and Stratton are African American women, so they're going to kind of split the same base to some extent. Kelly seems to be in the third place according to the polls, but she's not dropping out. That kind of hurts Stratton, and it may hurt her enough to let Krishnamoorthy kind of gobble up what's left, which is most of the vote. So we'll see. But clearly, there have been different strategies here. I personally think that to really get back in it, Stratton's going to have to go negative on Krishnamoorthy even more so than she has. And really try to bring him down. The time is running short. We're about to early voting is about to begin up here statewide. So did she wait too long to make her move and for Pritzker to give her the $5 million with more to come? Maybe, maybe not.
Well, let me move on. We've got a few minutes left here, and I do want to talk about kind of the latest happenings with the Chicago Bears. Bears are still a lot of rumblings out there about what they're going to do for a new stadium. Indiana legislators still in action this month, and they're trying to lure the team to Northwest Indiana. Illinois leaders, I've talked about trying to keep them in the city, but also now Arlington Heights becoming a bigger player. The Bears own property there, the old Arlington Racecourse, talking about building a stadium and complex out there. Some top lawmakers, Greg, seem more open to helping the team, especially with infrastructure needs, than paying for the stadium itself. But is there movement going on that I'm just not hearing about?
Maybe. Set the stage here. The Bears had everybody thought they didn't have any choice, but Arlington Heights, everybody in state government, and that eventually they would have to cave in. Well, the Bears put together this kind of Indiana thing, and maybe it's a fake. If it is a fake, it's a pretty good one. But Indiana has gotten warmer and warmer to the idea of building a stadium for the Bears and somewhere around Gary on the public dime and leasing it to the team. A bill to authorize that cleared the Indiana House of Representatives, and then just yesterday, we're taping this on Friday, the Speaker of the Indiana House said he would sponsor that bill. He'd been kind of holding out. He said he wanted to make sure the Bears were really serious about Indiana. All that increases the pressures on the locals to do something. Are the Bears really going to go to Indiana? Don't know, but I think this Indiana move has really got everybody's attention in a way that didn't before. The governor in particular has made nicer and nicer comments about, well, we need to do something. The bottom line here, I think, is that the infrastructure isn't going to be a problem. They can come to an agreement on that. The argument is that, well, the infrastructure won't just pay for the Bears. It'll pay for other stuff that they need out in the northwest suburbs. So it's really not on the taxpayers' nickel. The question is one, how are they going to pay for the remaining $500 million of debt or so on Soldier Field where the Bears play now? Chicago lawmakers really want that taken care of. If they don't, they could withhold votes from a Bears bill. And two, can the Bears and school districts in the Arlington Heights area reach a deal to kind of split the baby on property tax revenue and taxes? If those two elements can be achieved, this bill will pass. Is some progress being made? Everybody's gotten really quiet, which makes me think some stuff is going on, but we'll see.
That gives Indiana a leg up is the sense that the Bears will want the stadium. They want to own the stadium. Because they own the stadium, they will have to pay property taxes. In Indiana would own the stadium if there's one built there, and the Bears would have no property taxes. And so I think that's a significant difference.
That's a good point. Greg, is that enough? I mean, I guess when I first heard Indiana was interested, I thought about it sort of like this is just a ploy, maybe some political move that so you know Indiana lawmakers are talking about in Chicago. The Bears are not going to leave the state of Illinois, but like Charlie said, that's one of those key issues that could be enough to send them over the border, it seems.
Well, it is an element, Sean, but I personally think the Bears want to own their own stadium. They're in a lease situation now at Soldier Field. They've had a terrible experience because they don't control it. They don't control naming rights. They don't control signage or everything else. That may have kind of given them the idea that dealing with a publicly owned facility is not always hunky-dory. They want to be able to not only develop a stadium, but a lot of stuff around the stadium, shopping and entertainment and retail and whatever that they'll make money off of as well. That's kind of the paradigm now in building new stadiums. They want to do with for instance, what the Ricketts did around Wrigley Field, which is there's all kinds of stuff now that they're making money off of that it doesn't directly involve baseball. And they can do that if they own their own stadium in Arlington Heights. Can they do that in Indiana? Not clear.
And Charlie, we just spent a lot of time at the start of the show talking about the state's budget problems, talking about pensions, all these other things. It seems like a heavy lift to me for lawmakers to try to tackle this spring, but they may be forced to deal with this in some way. Would you agree?
I guess the pressure is there, but the comments that have come from House Speaker Chris Welch and Senate President Don Harman have been, look, we got a ton of other stuff that we have to worry about. And in terms of our priorities for this legislative session, unfortunately, the Bears are not at the top of the list. The Bears are a multi-billion-dollar operation, and we're worried about being able to provide healthcare to people who are losing it under federal changes. We're worried about the nutrition programs under the food stamps that are being devastated by federal cuts, all these other things that, in their judgment, are going to be on people's minds a lot more than where might the Bears be playing next season.
And just about 30 seconds here, Greg, but I guess my big issue with this, I always wonder, is if I'm a Chicago lawmaker, do I vote to even let the Bears move to the suburbs? I mean, I don't see what I gain from that. Maybe there is something I'm missing.
Well, that's why I said the question about does this debt at Soldier Field, which the taxpayers of Chicago are now responsible for, does that get taken care of somehow? If it does, I suspect that Chicago lawmakers will find their way to bite the bullet and say, well, gee, guys, we relieved you of this huge debt. If not, there's a problem.
All right, let's go to our notes from the field. Greg, we'll go ahead and start with you this week.
Keep an eye on the race for Cook County Assessor. That is a legendary position that back in the old days was kind of known as the Democratic machine's treasury because whoever was the assessor, they could kind of squeeze people who to make campaign donations. The position has been held by some very prominent Democratic families with names like Cowleton and Hines. The Hines being Tom Hines, who also was the president of the state Senate for a while. Well, there's a reformer now who's in his second term named Fritz Kagi, but Kagi has made some enemies in the way that reformers often do, and he's being opposed by a guy named, guess what, Hines, Pat Hines, who's an assessor out in the suburbs and is the nephew of Tom Hines. Tony Prackwinkle and the Cook County organization are on the other side of that one with Hines. So is organized labor. An upset is definitely possible there.
All right. And Charlie.
We've come into the beginning of a new month. So the flash index came out and the index for January dropped to 101.5 from a 101.7 level in December. University of Illinois Professor Emeritus Fred Geertz reported this week. He said it indicates a slowing but still growing Illinois economy. Any index reading of 100, that's the dividing line between growth and decline. So anything higher than 100 is good. And he said, quote, as what have become the norm, economic indicators provide mixed signals. National third quarter GDP growth was strongest since 2023, with some observers predicting continued robust growth in 2026. However, there are increasing signs that employment growth is slowing both in Illinois and nationally, he reported. And Professor Geertz, of course, is the person who compiles the index for the Institute of Government and Public Affairs at the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign. And also, the Commission on Government Forecasting and Accountability came up with its report of the state's financial situation. And in their report, they noted through the first 7 months of FY26, which is where we are now, revenues deposited in the state's general funds are up slightly more than $1 billion, growth of about 3.5% compared with the same time in FY2025. Personal income tax receipts are up, sales tax revenues are gaining. But in kind of a warning note, the federal sources are down more than $200 million from where they were a year ago. So that's about an 8% loss. So that's something to be worried about.
That's all the time we have for this episode of State Week. Our panel included Charlie Wheeler and Greg Hines with Crane Chicago Business. Look for State Week where you get your podcasts through the NPR app and at nprillinois.org. I'm Sean Crawford, and join us next time.
You've been listening to State Week, a program of commentary and analysis of events in Illinois state politics and government. State Week is produced in the state capitol by public radio station NPR Illinois. This is IPR, Illinois Public Radio.